I want to talk this morning about chains that bind us. Chains that bind us. Luke chapter 13, verses 10 through 17 that was read, we see a woman who was bound by an infirmity. She was physically, apparently hunched over. Maybe she had osteoporosis. You've probably seen those who have some people would refer to that person as a hunchback. Remember the famous Hunchback of Notre Dame that was written about. And we see sometimes those people with a physical deformity or infirmity, a sickness, an illness that has taken over their body and has caused them to not be able to live a normal life. And that was the case with this woman. She was so badly bent over that she couldn't even raise herself up. She couldn't stand up. So when Jesus saw her, He healed her. And He loosed her from her infirmity. And of course, the people were upset. But He says in verse 16, this woman whom Satan has bound. You know, we talked about the problem of why we suffer last time. We realize that suffering in this world, for the most part, is a result of Satan's influence in this world. Whatever the root cause of it is, whether it's an illness or an accident, you know, any kind of deadly disease, or whether it's somebody else causing those problems, it's a result, really, of Satan's work in this world. And Satan had bound this woman physically with an illness. And some of you know how that is. You know what it's like to have a lifelong struggle with illness of some kind or another. This woman was bound. She was in chains that Satan had placed on her. Not personally, physically necessarily, but still, Satan was responsible for her condition. And Satan still tries to bind us today. Sometimes he does use physical things like illnesses to try to keep us from doing what we should do for God. But I want us today to look at some things, and certainly, you know, with a physical illness, there are limitations. There's only so much we can do. But so many times, Satan uses things that we can overcome. He uses our own weaknesses. He uses problems in our own mind and in our own hearts to cause us to feel the wrong way about something, to cause us to think the wrong way about something. So we want to look at some of the things that Satan uses, some of the chains that he has to bind us with today. Some of us are bound by chains of ignorance. This is one of Satan's favorites. We have the saying, what you don't know won't hurt you. But that's not true. What you don't know will hurt you. If I'm driving down the road and I see a red light and I don't know what that red light means and I just drive right on through it and there's a big truck coming, the fact that I didn't know what that red light meant hurt me when that truck hits me. We say ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is not bliss. Oh, certainly people who are ignorant don't realize the danger that they're in or the problems, the suffering that they're going to experience. But that doesn't mean that it's bliss. In Hosea chapter 4 and verse 6, God says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being priest for me. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. Now, he was talking specifically to the priests here who were not doing their job to teach the law of God. But we've got to realize that any of us can be guilty of having ignorance in our lives that binds us. When we don't know how to do something, it limits us. We can overcome that, however. We don't have to remain ignorant. We can learn. We can grow. We can stretch beyond that. There may be many things that we don't know. And some of them will be somewhat dangerous to us in our lives, but some of them have eternal consequences. There was an older man and a young boy in a boat. The boy was rowing the older man across the river. And the old man, as they were rowing across, he said, "Young man," he picked up a leaf that was floating on the water, and he said, "Look at that." He said, "You know what kind of tree that is?" And the boy said, "No, sir." He said, "Well, you know, do you know anything about biology?" And the boy said, "No, I really don't." And the older man said, "Well, son, you've just lost 25% of your life." And they went on a little while longer, and he looked over at the shore, and he looked at the rocks, and he said, "You know, that looks like some sandstone, and looks like there's some pieces of marble over there." And he said, "Do you know anything about those rocks?" He said, "No, sir, I don't." He said, "You mean you don't know anything about geology?" And he said, "No, sir, I don't." And he said, "Well, you've just lost 50% of your life, son." And they went on a little further, and the man began to look up at the sky and the stars and the moon, and he said, "You see those stars? That's constellation Leo over here, and he said, "You know anything about stars?" He said, "I know they're pretty to look at, but I don't know anything else about them." He said, "Well, son, you don't know anything about astronomy?" "No, sir." "Well, son, you've just lost 75% of your life." A moment later, the boy looked up the river and noticed that the dam was breaking and the waters were beginning to rush down the river. He knew they would soon be upon them, and he turned to the old man and he said, "Sir, do you know how to swim?" The old man said, "No, son, I don't know how to swim." He said, "Well, you just lost 100% of your life." You know, there are some things that are important for us to know in life, but there are some things that may become essential for us to know. And when it comes to salvation and eternal life, there are some things that are essential. I don't have to be a scholar in math to get to heaven. I don't have to know foreign languages to get to heaven. I don't have to know all about science, and I don't have to know all about the great literature or even the history of this earth. I don't have to know those things. Oh, they can be helpful. They can be useful. I don't have to know those things. But if I don't know this book, the Bible, I'll never get there. We need to understand the importance of knowledge and not allow ourselves to continue to be chained and bound by Satan through the chains of ignorance. Secondly, some of us are bound by chains of prejudice. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 13 says, "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is a folly and shame to him." You ever do that? You ever make a decision about something before you heard all the facts? You'd already decided? Well, when you do that, you are prejudging. And that makes you prejudiced. Now, we all often condemn so-and-so's prejudice. But all of us, from time to time, have made the mistake of judging something before we knew all the facts. One man was riding in the car, and he stopped to pick up a hitchhiker, doing a good deed. And a little while down the road, he gave the fellow a business card and said, "Well, you know, if you need something, call me." And the fellow reached and pulled out his wallet and put the card in the wallet. And the man looked and that's my wallet. He had stolen. I've given him a ride and being kind to him, and he stole my wallet. So he stopped the car and forced the man to give him the wallet and then kicked him out of the car and went on to work. I couldn't believe that fellow had stolen his wallet. When he got to work, his wife called and said, "Honey, did you know you left your wallet on the dresser this morning?" He had prejudged something without all the facts. If he'd have looked in that wallet, he would have known very quickly that it wasn't his. But he assumed the worst of this man just because he was hitchhiking and needed a ride, that he must be a criminal. But we do that sometimes. In John chapter 1 and verse 46, Nathanael after Philip had come to him and said, "Hey, I found the Messiah, it's Jesus of Nazareth." And Nathanael said, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" He was prejudiced against people from Nazareth. But Philip had a good answer for him, though. Philip said, "You come and see." When we find somebody who's prejudiced, the best answer to that is, "You come and see. See and find out the truth of the matter. Find out all the facts. Then you can rightly judge a matter." That's one of the things that bothers me sometimes with these criminal cases. I tell you what, people have already determined whether somebody's guilty before they even go to court. They already know, oh, that person did, or that person didn't do it. They're being picked on, or that person did do it, and they should get them. They've already determined it. That's not the way it's supposed to work. It's supposed to have the facts in before the decision is made. But we need to refuse to allow Satan to bind us with chains of prejudice. Some of us are bound by chains of pride. Oh, I know that's never happened to you, but it does happen to some of us. We allow pride to get us. Obadiah chapter 1 verses 3 through 4. "The pride of your heart has deceived you. You who dwell in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, you who say in your heart, 'Who will bring me down to the ground?' Though you ascend as high as the eagle, though you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, says the Lord." You know, sometimes we just think that we can't be touched. We just think nothing bad is ever going to happen to us, and we think that everything's always going to be the way it is now. Everything's always going to be the same, and everything's going to be good for me. And I could make it no matter what. I'll be okay. Pride. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before the fall. Proverbs 16:18 tells us. So we need to understand that Satan uses our pride against us, and he can bind us with those chains of pride. We can become so arrogant and so full of pride that we will never admit we're wrong. That we will never ask for help when we need it. That we'll never come to God because we think we can do it ourselves. And Satan loves that. It's one of his favorite things. I may have to preach a sermon on that old song, "These Are a Few of My Favorite Things." We have to preach a sermon about a few of Satan's favorite things. He's got some things that he loves, and he loves to use them against us. Some of us are bound by chains of selfishness. We live in a society that, instead of America, sometimes we ought to just rename the whole place "Me First." The kids have a little video about some little penguins and this little boy that goes with these penguins on little journeys to fix the problems. And one of the places they go is to Planet Wait Your Turn. And at Planet Wait Your Turn, nobody wants to wait their turn. Everybody wants to be first. And because everybody wants to be first, it caused all sorts of problems, and it was about to destroy their world, and they have to figure out how to solve the problem. The leader of their planet is named "Know Me First." And he, of course, because of his selfishness and wanting to be first, winds up being the first one to be killed in whatever catastrophe it is. And so the new president is president after you. He let others go first. But sometimes we don't understand how big and problem selfishness can be for us. Philippians chapter 2 verses 3 through 4 says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest." Notice he doesn't say don't worry about yourself, don't take care of your own self, but he says not only your own interest, but also for the interests of others. He doesn't mean that we neglect ourselves for others' sake. But what he does indicate is that we can't only look out for number one. Well, isn't that the thing? Oh, look out for number one. We forget sometimes and think we're number one. We need to remember God's number one. And we do need to look out for Him first. And we come laying down the line. We sing a little song with the kids sometimes. J-O-Y. Joy. And he said, J-O-Y, this is what it means. Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between. Doesn't mean that we let others get between us and Jesus, but it means when, in the order of our concern, we concern first about Jesus, then about others, and then finally about ourselves. But esteem others as better than ourselves, Philippians 2 tells us. But sometimes Satan binds with those chains of selfishness. Then sometimes we are bound by chains of fear. Hebrews chapter 2, verses 14 and 15 says, "Inasmuch then as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, He Himself likewise shared in the same, that through death He might destroy him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage." Do you realize that Jesus came so that we would not have to be afraid of death? And yet, that is the biggest fear that most of us have, is death. But Jesus came so that He could release us from that bondage. See, Satan is keeping us in bondage by that fear of death. Because we're so afraid of death that we'll do anything, including sin, including deny Christ, including turn against God in order to keep from dying. See, that was the thing the first century church overcame. They overcame by their faith and by the fact that they did not love their lives even to death. That's how they overcame Satan. As long as we are afraid of death, Satan has a hold on us. Now, that doesn't mean that we just recklessly go out there and try to get killed. But we can't fear it. We can't live our lives constantly worried and afraid of physical death. Jesus said, "Fear not those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear Him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." Matthew 10 and verse 28. He said, "I'll tell you who you better be afraid of. You better be afraid of God. You want some fear? Fear God. Don't fear the devil. Don't fear death. Death is temporary. Hell is eternal." Then we need to understand that some of us are bound by chains of worldliness. We just can't let go of the world. Mark chapter 4 and verses 18 and 19, as Jesus explained the parable of the sower, He says, "Now these are the ones who were sown among thorns. They are the ones who hear the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires of other things entering in choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful." So many of us hear the word, and we respond to it when we hear it, but then as we go on along, we allow our desire for things to get in the way of our service to God. We allow the deceitfulness of riches to cause us to choose to do worldly things rather than godly things. We say, "Well, if I want to get ahead in this world, I've got to lie and cheat a little. If I want to get ahead, then I've got to take that overtime that's going to cause me to miss church. If I want to get ahead, then I've got to buy the new car that means I'm going to have to work an extra job that's going to keep me away from church and my family." You see, we're getting caught up in worldliness and materialism when we do that. We always think we've got to have something more, something better. It'll never be enough. As long as we want whatever the best, latest, newest thing is, there'll always be another one that comes along. We've got to learn to throw off the chains of worldliness that are binding us. Some of us are bound by chains of lukewarmness. In Revelation 3, 15 and 16, Jesus says to the church of Laodicea, I know your works, that you're neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot. You realize that? Jesus would rather have people just be cold and hate him. He said, I wish you were cold or hot. But you're lukewarm and I'm going to spew you out of my mouth. Can you understand how disgusted Jesus is with lukewarmness when he says he would rather you turn against him entirely? He would rather you just be cold? And I can think of several reasons that he would feel that way. The most obvious is that people who have turned against Jesus do far less harm to the church than people who supposedly are Christians but aren't living like it. You know, I never have heard anyone say, you know, I don't want to go down there to your church because so-and-so out there is just living like the devil. No, they say, I don't want to go to your church because so-and-so in there is a hypocrite. They don't ever point at the atheist and go, I don't want to go to your church because so-and-so is an atheist. Oh. The people who are cold to God aren't the ones who keep people out of the church. It's the people in the church that are lukewarm that keep others out. Then some of us are bound by chains of procrastination. And boy, I don't know about you, but that one hits close to home with me. It is always so easy to think, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it next week. Or, well, you know, I messed up my New Year's resolution, but I'll next year I'll start again. Why do we think we got to wait till next year? I know this has got programmed into us. Well, the only time you can make a change in your life is when you make a New Year's resolution. Why can't we start today? Why can't we start right now and say, you know what, right now I'm going to do that. I'm not going to put it off any longer. Matthew chapter 8, verses 21 through 22, Jesus is gathering disciples, and another of his disciples, he had said, come follow me, and one of the disciples says to him, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. But Jesus said to him, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. Now, sometimes we don't understand this passage. We think, Jesus is telling him not to go to his father's funeral? Well, now, if Jesus had told him, don't go to your father's funeral, come follow me, he should have followed Jesus. But that's not what Jesus is saying. What this man is saying, his father's still alive. And he's saying, well, Lord, you know what? As long as my father's alive, I've got to take care of my dad. But after he's gone, after he's dead and I bury him, then I'll go follow you. And Jesus said, don't wait till your dad dies. Follow me now. Do we do that sometimes? Do we put Jesus off? We say, well, Lord, you know, after this happens, or after that happens, then I'll, you know, after I get married, then I'll really, you know, then I'll, after I have kids, then when I, what, now, Lord, after I have children, then I'll really follow you. Well, Lord, you know, just let me get my kids grown. You know, it's so much trouble to take these little ones to church. So after they get grown up a little bit, then I'll start really coming to church then. I'll really follow you then. And then they get old. Well, Lord, you know, you know how tough it is to get these teenage kids to want to go to church, and they don't want to come. And it's such a, but after I get them grown, Lord, I'll really turn my life over to you. See, there's always something else. Always something else to keep putting it off till tomorrow. But which of these chains are binding you? Satan uses some or all of these very effectively with different individuals. I don't know everything about your life. I don't know what is keeping you bound. But you need to throw it off. You need to throw off every weight and the sin that so easily entangles and run with endurance the race that is set before us. Throw off those chains. Can you imagine trying to run a race? Have you ever picked up chain? I'm not talking about a little chain like you might have on a little puppy dog. Have you ever picked up the chains that they use to tow a car with? Ever picked up a pile of those? Yeah, probably a lot of you haven't. They are heavy. Now imagine those chains wrapped around you. Now try to run a race with that. Try to run that race with all those chains dragging, and you barely even lift your feet with all those chains hanging on you. Get the chains off so you can run the race. Are there chains that are keeping you from being as effective as you could be? You need to get rid of them. You need to throw them off. They are Satan's chains binding you, keeping you. He's trying to keep you out of heaven is what he's trying to do. Don't let him succeed. You remember what Jesus said? That he was here to free this woman? Be loosed from your infirmity. Well, Jesus can free you too. Don't let Satan continue to bind you. This woman had been bound for 18 years. How many years you gonna wait to get Satan's chains off of you? Now she was, she probably done all she thought she could do until she heard about Jesus. You think she said, "Well, you know, I've been bound 18 years. I'll wait 18 more." When she heard about Jesus, you know, she went on the Sabbath day. They were, I don't work to do this on the Sabbath day, but she knew it was important. She wanted to get healed. She didn't care what day of the week it was. She didn't care if it was supposed to be Jesus' off day. She was going to come find him. Are we that serious about getting Satan out of our lives and taking control of our lives and giving it over to God? We can. We can do it. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, if you're not a Christian, you need to become one. Satan will bind you with these chains of ignorance, with the chains of pride. Well, I don't need to do that. He'll bind you with that chain of procrastination. Well, you can do it next month or next. Just wait. You're not ready yet. He loves to use these chains. Selfishness. Well, just think what you'd have to give up if you ever became a Christian. Worldliness. Just think, don't do that. You enjoy in life. You have fun. Take care of yourself. Look out for number one. If you want to look out for number one and you think you're number one, you better, first of all, realize God's number one and then look out for number two. Get your life right with Him. If you're here and you are a Christian, but perhaps you've allowed some of these things to continue to keep you held back from reaching your full potential, you may need to respond to the invitation as we stand and as we sing.